Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our Q4 and annual results 2011. I would like to welcome all the people here in the room and also the analysts and investors on the line, but also our colleagues who are listening in on the line. Welcome. We have also here the whole executive board present in the room, of course, also Greg. It's your last time, so hopefully they have some nice questions for you. Yeah, we're ready to start. Ben will kick off with a presentation on the performance, followed by Robert-Jan, who will talk about the financial performance, and then we'll have the Q&A.
Good afternoon and/or good morning to everybody. 2011, if you look strategically, a year with a good development in a number of different ways. If you look at the two major markets in our business, obviously being the U.S. and Japan, we established a good position in Japan at the end of 2010, and we now strengthened our position, obviously, in the U.S. after the SFN acquisition. It also made us number two in the professionals business worldwide, if you look at the gross margin, which is, of course, an important step forward in our targets. So better spread business geographically, bigger position in the biggest market in the world, a good position possibly to expand from in Japan, and, of course, a strong position in Europe historically. So in that respect, a good year. Looking at the performance, obviously, we've seen a year with sort of different faces, but also different faces at the same time in different regions, as we have seen the differences in growth rates in the U.S., Europe, and obviously Asia-Pac. 30% revenue growth in Q4, diluted earnings per share up 8%. Highlights for me are also profit up 18%. So all in all, given the market circumstances and the atypical cycle, good results. If we go to slide number five, it is, right? Yeah. I was asked to mention the number of the slide because for the people that are watching online. Starting with the main trends in markets, we see the growth trends here, the graph on the right upper corner. It's a clear trend, obviously. It slowly goes down, so gradual reduction. If you look at our own performance in those respective markets, at the right bottom-hand side, we see that especially the U.S. is going up again. We've seen the classical development. I'll get back to that later because, obviously, we have a separate slide on North America. By the way, we also, I forgot to mention, we have a celebration today. This is the 40th time that Robert-Jan presents quarterly results for Randstad. I'm only at 38, so we suddenly realized ourselves, well, it's almost he almost deserves a pen now, but next time maybe.
I don't know.
Q4, slowing growth, obviously, as you've seen in the graphs in the main markets. Statistics on market developments that are, as you know, not from all markets as reliable, but we try to make our best estimate for the markets where we do not have the right numbers. 4% organic growth, obviously Q4, having 1.5 working day less, that has an impact. Staffing was flat. Easing growth, we saw still growth in-house, but obviously also easing if you compare it to Q4 2010, where we had 51% growth, be it also partly caused by transfers, but still, we saw considerable growth. So easing from 51% to 6% is quite a difference. Perm fees up 15%, flat organically. So the trends in the markets are clear. Underlying gross margin went from 18.9% to 18.3%. Obviously, one of the key items in our P&L, so Robert-Jan will spend quite some time on it and some slides to clarify exactly what happened and where did what happen, actually. Operating expenses flat, as we had forecasted. Obviously, in Q3, there was only one month of SFN costs included, and this time, it's the full quarter. Underlying EBITDA, more or less flat. EBITDA margin at 3.7%. If we look at a full year, I already referred to our position, number two in the professionals business now. We measure professionals business on gross margin. Top line is sort of difficult because there's quite a lot of permanent placement, and as you know, Revenue up 14%, of which 9 organically to 16.2. Whereas again, we only were able to include one third of SFN's revenue. Would we have included that, then we would be above the 17 billion again. Which sounds familiar because that's where we were when we merged with Video the first year. We have a stronger focus on client profitability. We already told you the last quarter and the quarter before, actually. Actually, on a client-on-client basis, for example, in Poland, it has an effect. In France, we're looking at the number of clients, etc. So all across the board, we're looking more at profitability per client. We stop subsidizing clients. The good news we saw so far in, for example, France, is that quite a few customers actually did accept better terms for the future instead of swapping supplier. As Evan, I referred to already, underlying EBITDA up 18% to 601 million. And I think which is on here, but also a strong cash generation, which, as we all know, is king. Leverage ratio well below 2, as we had anticipated, which enables us to propose to the shareholders a dividend of 1.25 per share, €1.25. And usually shareholders accept what we propose there. Payout ratio of 53%. If we go to the next slide, start with the Netherlands. We've had quite a debate whether or not we should keep the sequence as is. But according to specialists, the analysts in the world have had a certain sequence in their spreadsheet they don't want to change, so we'll keep it as is. Revenue up per working day of 3%. We had two working days less, obviously. Randstad considerably above market, as they were in Q3, but actually they gained even a bit more market. Tempo Team lagging behind, not a lot, but a little bit. And Yacht, we have no market numbers, but they had a decline of a very low single-digit number. So we look forward to Q1. Of course, we also obviously took the measures to get better profitability out of Yacht in this year. Public sector-related business was flat, but also here we saw a dual development. We saw that a few clients, especially with Transat Netherlands, actually showed growth, whereas in all the other segments, we still saw a decline. So it's a two-faced market here. Private sector up 3%. Maybe predominantly, driven by the industrial and technical sector. I'll get back to the sectors which show growth in a few slides. EBITDA margin at 6.1%. Again, two working days less. Bigger growth in blue collar, which actually the last market numbers indicated a small decline. Cost adjusted, mainly for a big reorganization in Tempo Team, where we cancelled quite a few management positions, mainly actually exclusively in the head office, and then some for Yacht. On the right bottom side, you can see that we are now stable at a 14% dependency on public sector-related revenue. France, still gaining market share, really doing excellent. Automotive and manufacturing, especially automotive, by the way, you'll see in a minute, automotive shows very consistently all across the globe, relatively high growth, double digit. Professional slowing down, still growing, but slowing down. And a continued strong growth of in-house. And the growth there is mainly created by gaining market share at existing clients, which, as we know, always happened once we were able to go in-house with a client. Subsidies were fully compensated by price adjustments. So as we forecasted at the end of 2010, that actually happened. EBITDA margin flat at 2.9. Less permanent placement, obviously, and again, the focus on client profitability. We don't think it'll have a huge impact on our growth. And we are confident we still will keep on gaining market share, but there's a chance of some volume disappearing because of the fact that we look at the profitability more strictly. Germany, slowing volume growth. Revenue up 8% per working day. We also here had a loss of actually 3 working days, which of course has a huge, has a double impact because of the structure, the legal structure of staffing, where we have people on a contract. It's very simple. We have to pay wages whether or not they are working days. Doesn't matter. So that means it does have an impact on our profitability. Professionals up 13%. Biggest growth in our IT company, Gulp. and we divested aerospace. Just as a reminder, the reason we did it is because this is mainly output-related business. So we have to do the engineering. We're getting paid for the output. So that means we have to do the project planning. And that's not the core of what we are capable of. So we decided to divest that sort of business. And it's also depending on one client, which also is not the ideal situation strategically. EBITDA margin is 6.6% compared to 7.5%. We had a double effect in Q4. 2010, we had a 3 million positive on social security charges. Last year, Q4 2011, we had a 3% negative. The gap is 6. Plus the 3 working days, actually to a large extent, has caused the deterioration in an EBITDA margin. We're confident we'll keep it at very healthy levels if no major changes occur in market. Belgium, focus on improving business mix indeed. We were at -1 coming from a +4 per working day. In-house down 9% against a strong comparison base. We saw the biggest decline in in-house, if you want, of all countries in Belgium. Went from +over 40% to actually this situation. We gained market share in the clerical segment, which we organized in 2010 by opening a few extra, actually quite a few extra units in that business. And professionals grew 13%, very healthy. EBITDA margin 5.4%. Good cost control, nothing exceptional here. UK, challenging environment. We keep on telling you indeed the same story, and it's all true, that the government-related business, education and care, historically the big profit makers, obviously still suffer from the less spend of the government. The other two big profit makers were construction and finance, well, as you all know for sure. The city is not exactly booming, so we saw quite a decline in permanent placement orders there. So the effect is what it is today. And how is it -2 coming from a +84? Again, we also there are looking a lot more at profitability because we've been gaining market share and clients, but we need to gain more profitable business. Perm fees -15, again, city. EBITDA margin at -0.9. An important point, of course, we're still optimizing our organization as is. So we have a combined back office, but we don't have combined IT systems yet, etc. That's all work in progress. So we do expect that during this year we'll see things improving from an internal point of view, not forecasting what's going to happen in the market. North America, obviously, the other phase of Q4. Organic growth actually increasing again, which especially in staffing is remarkable because that never occurred in former cycles. We usually saw staffing growing fast, slowly declining, professionals picking up. But it was a sort of revival of staffing. Also, all the other statistics that are being published, and there are many in the US, give the same signals. It's going very well. Both staffing and professionals strongly outperformed market. That also helped because As you might remember on slide 1, I showed you also the market development in the US. It's more or less flat, whereas we see an increase. So US staffing in and out to a +7 coming from a +3 in Q3. That means really accelerating again, and that's continuing and actually improving even in January. Again, the focus on client profitability also here has had excellent effects. I think we have the highest profit we've ever seen in the US, except for maybe one quarter in 99, 98, somewhere in that region. Professionals up 15%. IT growing healthy. Engineering, very healthy. Engineering actually over 40% growth. Healthcare, continued strong growth as we've seen the former quarters. And strong performance in perm. EBITDA margin at 4.5%. Obviously impacted by the Hire Act. Hire Act, to refresh your memory, is a subsidy on unemployed, which we take to work. That has disappeared, has an impact of about 6-7 million. Job John's going to come back on that. And a strong contribution from SFN. SFN turned around from actually declining revenues to growth again. Profit going up compared to last year. So an excellent contribution from, in our view, again, an excellent acquisition. We do admit that the timing is always a bit luck. I'd rather say it was strategic planning perfect, but it's more luck. Strong performance as event plus two, slide number 14. Sorry, I forgot to mention the slides. EBITDA margin from 3.7%-5%. Staffing up 1% from a single-digit decline, as I mentioned before. Professionals at plus 4%. And then, of course, we also need to talk about the integration. The excellent news we have discovered in the process of this integration, we promised you at least 30 million synergies, and we now can be very confident in promising you at least 40 million cost synergies, which is quite a big impact. We maintain, obviously, the 10 million net advantage in taxes. And the costs, obviously, are taking in out as exceptionals for the normalized numbers. If you look at what industry segments actually show what performance, manufacturing, modest growth to stable. Automotive, high growth in almost all main markets. Food, obviously, more or less stable, which is to be expected. We're not going to eat suddenly a lot more because of a good or a bad economy. We might eat more expensive or cheaper. That's a difference. And then, of course, if we look at the other thing that we see from this table is that in the U.S., everything is doing well, which is an excellent signal if you look back, if you look forward to the remaining developments, possible developments this year. So if you look at what do we see happening, first of all, an atypical cycle, obviously. Cycle did not actually finish its normal development, or else we would now be booming in everywhere, in all segments, especially in professionals. It's not happening. The press conference, I gave the example, we're playing soccer, and suddenly somebody came in the field that played rugby. So it's an atypical development. We completely depend on field steering and not on our view or expectation of what's going to happen. Obviously, we see three possible scenarios. Flat revenue, that means we will be more efficient and profitability will go up. Continued growth, then we'll get closer and over time we'll reach our strategic targets. With a decline, as obvious, we'll focus on profit protection. But not, we don't have any of these scenarios as a given. Field steering is the name of the game. And finally, we have a solid balance sheet, which, of course, is also looking back, enables us to pay 1.25 euros dividend to our shareholders, which makes us happy because we had this unlucky situation where we did not pay dividend last year, 1.18, now 1.25. So we're well within our policy. I'll now hand over to Robert-Jan, who's going to take you through the financials. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Couple of remarks on the income statement for the fourth quarter. And the way I like to explain it is that the upper part is sort of making economic sense, and from here, it gets sort of driven by some bookkeeping rules. The 180 here includes both the additional impairment of 125 million euros and the regular amortization of, as it is called, acquisition-related other intangibles. So the value of the portfolio, the contacts, the brands, and so forth. How did we get to 125 million? That's art rather than science. We did have to allocate the goodwill at the time that Video was acquired to the various countries, which is sort of not in line with economic reality, but this was the rules enforcing it. And if you sort of take the temperature at the end of last year, the conclusion is that in America, you know, we have a better development than anticipated, and in Iberia, mainly Spain and the U.K., the developments are below expectations. As a result of which, we had to reduce the value of the goodwill in these two geographies. So Iberia, Spain, effectively, and the U.K., we've taken out 125 million of goodwill. Then, over here, we have a net finance income. Of course, we love to see it this way, and the finance expenses of Randstad are relatively low, We're currently paying just north of 1% on our euro lending and below 1% on our US dollar lending. But still, this line also includes the revaluation of what we call the deferred consideration. And that is the value that we have reserved in the balance sheet to pay out the minority shareholders. And once every year we go through this thoroughly. And there was a release because of sort of the changed underlying fundamentals. It's EBITDA driven, there's a formula. And the release ends up on this line. Tax, 31 million, roughly in line with the margins we have indicated to you, 29 up to 32%. It arrives at 30%. Diluted EPS up a little more than EBITDA, and you know this contributes clearly the finance expenses. Then the remaining key points, increase of the underlying EBITDA by 1 million. The DSO, the fifth bullet point on slide 20, DSO improved by 1 day to 54 days. 1 day is roughly 50 million euros of value, so we continue to be focused on it. But there is quite some pressure in the commercial context of clients looking for delayed payment, as a result of which you know they don't have the same dependence on the banks. And we are always explaining them that we are not a bank and that we also have a substantial charge for any credit being used. Free cash flow up to 216 million for the fourth quarter, and the leverage ratio stands at 1.8, well below the 2 as indicated at the end of Q3. Dividend was mentioned already. We look at the segments, the segment performance, so staffing, in-house and professionals. In the staffing segment, the organic change was 0, so roughly flat, whereas EBITDA was lower, 12%. And what we do see underlying here is that the industrial segments continue to grow. We have seen strong growth in North America here, but a gradual slowdown across Europe. And we've indicated in our press release that the revenue development in the month of January is 0%, which means if US is growing, then there's a decline in Europe. In-house, organic revenue development of 6% against a very strong comparison base, and I have to say a shift in the portfolio. There's more French business here, for example. Professionals up 3% in terms of revenues. Growth clearly led by the IT and engineering sector, and it also includes a clear slowdown in the permanent placement fees in Europe. In the old days, the combination Randstad-Vedior, at the very early days, it was at 12.2% of gross profit. If you look at the value of permanent placement fees, and as per today, we're still below 10. Ben mentioned it, the cycle has not really come to flourishing fully, and this is part of it. Slide 22, the gross margin. Let me make a statement first. The gross margin January is flat year on year, so against January 2011. That's what we do see in the month of January for 2012. What I'm showing you here is a couple of sort of analysis on the gross margin. First of all, how does Q4 compare to Q4 2010? And what's in between are a couple of boxes. One is the Hire Act. Ben mentioned it, 5 million euros and a few more million dollars, of course, of Hire Act, and that is people that have been unemployed for more than 60 days. There was a subsidy arrangement, but it only was in force in 2010. So it was kicked out in 2011. Here also, we did have a challenge from a bookkeeping standpoint, an accrual standpoint. At the end of 2010, especially in our German business, we did have some items that could classify as one-offs, but you know, that's always a discussion. What do you sort of show as one-offs and which ones do you not show as one-offs? Because it's always disputable. Given the trend where we were in, clear positive trend, we decided not to classify a couple of items as non-recurring. And at the end of 2011, the typical German conservatism was a little less than before. So, you know, on the one hand, we had some releases in 2010. At the other hand, we had less releases at the end of 2011. So you should add those up. Roughly 6 million impact on the gross margin as a result of that. A typical decision given the trend in 2010 that we were in. but with hindsight, we should have elaborated on these a little more. SFN Group comes in on the gross margin with a positive contribution because the average is higher. It impacts the average of 0.5%. Permanent placements relative to 2010, also a small positive contribution. And what then remains is the impact on the temp margin of 0.8, which is price and mix effects, but mostly mix effects. And I'm going to explain that because I'm now moving to the lower part of slide 22, and it's a temp margin here. So that takes out the permanent placement part. Again, looking at Q4 2010 compared to Q4 2011, again, the impact of the higher act and others here, but then quarter by quarter, 1, Q2, Q3, Q4, you can see the change here. And what happened is quite some contracts, and we have shared it with you, have been renegotiated at the end of 2010, kicking in with lower prices in 11. And that impact has continued to show up in the quarters in 2011. But as you can see, it has not deteriorated, and it's mainly mix effect here. Looking at it in a different way, again, the temp margin development, but now from Q2 to Q4 sequentially. If we go from Q2 into Q3 as a first step, then the French subsidies do contribute positively here because we, in Q3, were able to charge more to our clients than in Q2. Remember, we increased prices to compensate the loss of French subsidies. The typical seasonal pattern from Q2 to Q3 is roughly 0.2%, mainly the Belgium situation with students, which we have elaborated upon for the last couple of years. Again, the price mix effect that was mentioned before and the contribution of SFN. It's less than on the previous slide because this is only the temp margin. It does not include the permanent placement fees. So that makes us arrive at 16.3. Again, the next quarter, seasonality, roughly 0.2, but this time up because Q4 typically comes in higher. Price mix effect, again, which was elaborated upon, and SFN. So this gives you sort of some background. But again, January gross margin is stable to January 2011. Operating expenses. I think this shows good cost control, and effectively it's rather simple. If we take Q3 on slide 24, if we take Q3, it's 590 million that was reported. It included 23 million for SFN. SFN was consolidated as from the early days of September. But for the comparison base, we're taking it out here. Some foreign exchange effect and some organic effect here. But then we put in SFN for the full quarter, and then we arrive at 638. So what it means effectively here is the change between Q3 and Q4 is fully contributable to the addition of SFN. Overall FTEs roughly in line with the previous quarter, and we have seen a reduction of the number of outlets, partly in the Netherlands due to the adjustments at Tempo Team, in the UK commercial choices, in France also because of certain commercial choices, and that makes us arrive at 4,700 branches. There's a limited currency effect in these calculations. The synergies have started to materialize as well, and they do roughly contribute 3 million in the fourth quarter. The balance sheet of Randstad, what the header says it, what it effectively does show is the addition from end of 2010 to the end of 2011 is purely related to SFN. So it's rather straightforward. Looking at slide 26, the free cash flow up 7% to 216 million. And also here, I would say a rather stable pattern, 140 million cash flow from operations, positive contribution from working capital, which is typical in the fourth quarter. For the full year, there was also a very small amount here, and that is due to the fact that, you know, growth especially occurred in 2010, where we really had to invest in working capital. And please note that in Q4, typically we get September paid, October paid, November is mostly outstanding, and that clearly has an impact on how the cash flow development develops in the fourth quarter. We did invest in what it means, PPA, plant, property and equipment. In our case, that's furniture, that's IT equipment and some software. 32 million, a little more than the previous year, but on a full year basis, still, I would say, below historical levels. Ending up at 216 million, and the 216 was then used, but you know, there's a positive contribution from disposals here. It was used to buy out some minority interests, some finance expenses. And then there is always a translation effect here, because our debt is mostly in US dollars, then euros, then yen. And it is purely a sort of a mirror of the operational cash flow, you could say, of the EBITDA. So this is our economic policy. We mirror, let's say, the cash flow into the debt, because the cash flow pays the debt. That is the economic underlying choice. It has been like this for the last 10 years. But then, because of the acquisition of SFN, we do have translation effects coming in here. The income statement for the full year, very little additional to say about it. It includes the same amounts, of course, relating to goodwill impairment. So I'll flip through this. To summarize, the full year 2011, I would say good performance in a mixed year. It feels like we were entitled to a more positive economic climate, having seen a couple of cycles by now. But that's not how it is. It's good to see that we have a global economy at two speeds, the US clearly moving ahead. The underlying EBITDA went up to 601 million, 18%. EPS at 232. DSO down by one day at the end of the year, 54. And free cash flow amounted to 435 million. We are focused on maintaining a solid financial position. Also, Ben mentioned it at the end of his presentation. And I wanted to point out, these are the levels of our net debt. And you can always see that Q2 is the typical, or is the odd one out. And that will continue to be like that, because in Q2 we pay dividend and we pay holiday allowances in some countries, which will always increase our net debt level. We aim to be below 2, and that's also how we looked at financing the SFN deal. We're now at 1.8, and even if the times might get a little difficult, you know, we would see substantial release of working capital. Hopefully, that's not going to be the case, but if it is the case, releases of working capital will support the leverage ratio of Randstad. The dividend policy. Dividend payout is fully in line with the policy that we have had in place for quite a while, aiming at a floor of €1.25. And as long as it fits the payout range between 30 and 60% of adjusted net profit, well, in this case, the €1.25 requires us 53%. So it's fully in line. And that means the cash out of the company will be just north of 200 million. We'll go ex-dividend early April, and the payout will be just like a bit more than 2 weeks later, the 19th of April. The outlook for 2012, growth per working day moved from 7% in September to 4% in December. If you look at growth over the last year, 15% in the first quarter, 11% in the second, 7% in the third, and at the end of the year, just north of, just south of 4%. So we have seen quite a development. If you look at January, the growth per working day stands at 0%, and that's quite a mix. The US clearly up. European countries down. Some pricing effect, positive, in the, for example, in Germany. So I'm going to give you the rates for January. U.S. staffing plus 13, U.S. professionals plus 15 in January. SFN on a strong plus 6%. That adds up to 9% for all of North America. And then please note that if we would have included SFN in Q4, on a pro forma basis, then our growth would have been 6 to 7% in Q4. So that is a good development, I would say. The Dutch business stands at minus 2, France minus 3.5, Germany plus 6. This is where two collective labor agreement increases do have an impact, clearly. We do have Belgium at minus 7, UK at minus 12, Iberia at minus 10. And then I need to make one statement on top of this, and that is that the month of January, in terms of growth per working day, is a very difficult one to measure, because typically companies do not start actively being involved with flex workers as from the first working day of the year. And the holiday season also clearly had an impact here. So these numbers might well not be the right indications yet. Field steering then, it remains to be the name of the game. It should ensure our adaptability up or down. I can tell you, however, that when you're sort of around the tipping point, times are a bit more difficult than when you're in a clear upturn or downturn. And this is where we clearly have to modify our approach country by country. That's my contribution, and we'll move to Q&A now.
We'll start the Q&A first in the room, and then we'll move to the line.
Yes, Twente Jose, ABN AMRO. Actually, only questions on your gross margin. When I was looking at the historical gross margin trends, since 1999, the gross margins in the Netherlands, Germany and France are at their all-time low. What is going to recover those gross margins? And then a second one is on the remark that Robert Jan made on the gross margin in January. If I recall correctly, last year there was a minus 20 basis points negative impact from the French subsidies. Is that also included in that flat gross margin, or is that excluding the French subsidies?
Question two is included. Question one, how far did you look back, Tuin?
1999.
Yeah, I have them here too. Actually, indeed. What we've seen, of course, is that in every downturn, we've discussed this before, with the delay, volumes drops, margin drops. And then with a delay, when volume picks up, margin recovers. However, seldom to the same level. But the biggest impact in for the total company is obviously the mix. But that's what we've seen all the time. So margin doesn't go back to the all-time high. That's also why we constantly are developing new delivery models that are more efficient to actually compensate for that. Because I'm sure you also looked at the cost level. Well, 1999 is not a good year to compare it to, but you also will have seen that costs have come down 5-6% compared with those years. So,
David.
Thanks, David de Rabobank. On the profitability in the U.S. If I make the right calculation, then so if I strip out the 5% EBITDA margin of SFN, then the existing business, initial business of Randstad, is doing 4.1% EBITDA margin versus 4.9 in Q3. What's the explanation for that decline?
Yeah, I will have to check the numbers on that. I know Q4, obviously, we had the Hire Act impact, so give us a minute. I think I just want to confirm. You've got the number right.
Yeah. Maybe to add to that, it could have to do with how you calculate the synergies, of course. If you fully add this to the SFN margin or the original Randstad business, but maybe we can have a follow up on that.
Yeah, because I don't think if you made this, I want to check the math because I'm not sure that's correct. That if you strip out SFN, that the margin went down. So I want to confirm that.
And maybe a quick one on
EBITDA margin in Q3 was 3.8%.
Sorry, for North America, 4.7. For North America.
In Q3. Oh yeah, there's exceptions are in there. You're right. Yeah.
4.7. So adjusted for SFN, it was 4.9.
Yeah.
And if you make that calculation for Q4, you arrive at 4.1. Excluding SFN.
Yeah. If we look at the different units, I got the big book here. The biggest decline we saw was in in-house. In-house we had an exceptional quarter. No, not even that. Sorry. I have to check.
We can check that later on.
No, it's exceptions.
Maybe on perm trends, I'm seeing from growth 14% to flat organically. Is that the market trend or something for Randstad specifically? Also looking at your ambitions to accelerate the growth. And is this related to any specific country, for example, France?
Perm development? No, we think it's market. We don't think we are underperforming. Actually, in a number of markets, we're overperforming, and in some we might be underperforming. It's a mix. It also, of course, has to do with the focus. As I mentioned earlier, like in the UK, where we focus on the city. City, obviously, is one market as such, so we cannot extrapolate the development in that market to the rest of the world. So you've seen the development in financials, but for sure, perm in the city is being extra hit. So we see market share gains, I'm sure, in perm in France. So we see sort of a mixed picture. US, we are, I think, doing better than market. So it's a mixed picture there.
And the trend is continuing into January?
We don't have the numbers yet. At least I didn't look at them.
Thanks.
And maybe one question, the question on the US. In Q3, it included SFN only for 1 month, which had an exceptional result in September. That was partly related to the fact that it was consolidated since September 2nd, and we had the cutoff in the balance sheet also included in that month. So the result of SFN itself was very high in September. And as we also said in the call, then September was not representative for the run rate in Q4.
I just checking without giving the exact, because I'm not sure if I can give the numbers, but both are, if you strip out SFN, just go quarter to quarter, professionals and staffing, both professionals and staffing have a higher return in the core Randstad business in Q4 than Q3. So somewhere there's a math.
No, it's true. It's the SFN effect.
That was a big contribution in September from SFN. Yeah.
Good question, David. We got us all confused.
Okay, let's go for another stripping exercise. Are you ready? If you go to the professional segment, I think continuously in every press release, it is mentioned that professional profitability is depressed by the Netherlands and by the UK. So what happens excluding these bleeders in the professional segment? Are you somewhere near your target? Can you shed some light on that on a quarterly basis or on a yearly basis? That's the first question. And the second question is, again, on the gross margin in January, you mentioned that on a year-over-year basis it's flat. But what happens to the temp margin? Is it also flat only for the temp margin? That's my second question.
Yeah, it's flat also for the temp margin, so the same statement applies.
Target professionals, we said, at a high in the cycle, we want to be at 10%. We're not at a high in the cycle. So, for sure, we have units where we have high profits, but it's small units relatively. So that's not something we can say we are at target for the business as such. Also, US still is not as where they should be. So UK, for sure, is loss-making. France is doing okay. So it's again, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, Wim Giller, Royal Bank of Scotland. I've got a question on the 125 million impairment. As I understand it, it's solely related to former Valeo activities in predominantly Spain and the UK. Are there also other, let's say, geographies or areas where you're getting close to the threshold where you start to have to make impairments? And what is the number in terms of in terms of goodwill that is at risk?
Yeah, the surplus that we have is a couple of billions, and that tells you how crazy this is. There's only two countries at risk, no more, and these are the countries that I've just mentioned. And I don't expect us to have a similar exercise in the next quarters.
Good afternoon, Matthijs van Kepler, from Kepler. Two questions from my side. First on UK, you're talking about next to city-oriented business, you're talking about a large contract you've lost in the UK. Could you please elaborate on that? And the second one is, in the press release, you were talking about integration costs, SFN, and it used to be 80%, and now it's 100% of cost synergies. Could you please elaborate on it?
Yeah, large contract was an in-house, which actually encompassed 18 in-house branches. That's it.
The synergies in SFN,
The analysis that we shared with you led to us expecting 30 million annual synergies, cost synergies, and 10 million annual tax synergies. That was based on a preliminary analysis. With all the insight that we have now, we have been able to have an in-depth analysis on that, on those elements, and we have learned that we can exceed the number, but then have to invest more. And that's why it goes up from 80 to 100. But because these are annual, so recurring synergies, it makes well up for the external, for the additional investment. And if we have to invest more, we would do it as well to speed it up.
Okay, just so 100% of $40 million.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
So the last question in the room, and then we'll move to the line and come back in the room. Last question, Mark.
Yeah, I got a question on SG&A. Normally, you give providers with some guidance on a quarterly basis. Could you give us some guidance on the Q1? And then a next question. It's hard for me to extrapolate from your rest of the world business what the Fuji staff group, how that is performing. Could you give us a little bit of more feeling for that? And a final one in your, yeah, and third one here. Sorry, on your gross margin calculation, quarter on quarter, I don't see any impact there from the working days. Could you perhaps shed a bit of light on that one as well?
Okay, guidance, first of all, you know, we try to do what we feel is necessary. And because we have now finalized January, we feel that sharing the January numbers with you is the best guidance we can give at this point in time. And you know how we make adjustments to the cost base of the company. It's directly related to the gross margin, gross profit development. The developments at Fuji staff, actually, you know, this has been a rather good year. We've started the year with a horrible tsunami and earthquake. We did anticipate a severe impact of that, but in the end, it had very little impact. The company has not achieved growth, I should mention, but very tiny decline with improved results. So it's well on track. The integration has been completed. So we are very happy with the trend that we do see in the Japanese business.
So it is profitable?
Business. Yeah, it is. Surely it is.
And your first remark on the SG&A guidance, you said we guide on the progress of gross profit. Since that is the margin is flat year on year, is that then also the bit how we should take the guidance on the SG&A?
No, Robert-Jan said that the gross margin is flat, not that as a percentage. Because obviously we have a seasonality in here, so that means we will adjust our costs to the margin level, obviously. So I would not expect, I would for sure not expect an increase, Mark.
Yeah, we shared with you actually last year at the Investor Day that we did challenge our people with a scenario for 2012 where we would not see growth, as a result of which they had to deal with the cost increases per the 1st of January. And that's, you know, so our companies have been thinking about this well ahead, and we'll see what comes out then. You asked for the working days impact on the gross margin. That's a fair point, by the way, especially in Germany. In Q4, it's 3 days. So indeed, it does have an impact. So 3 days impact in the German gross margin. And for the full group, it was 1.5 days. And indeed, it's in the box other.
Okay, we move now to the line. First question, please.
Jamie Brandwood from UBS is online with a question.
Morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Just wanted firstly to ask about your French business. You say that you're reviewing client profitability. Can you let us know what kind of proportion of the French revenue is falling under this review? You know, what proportion of French sales are kind of deemed to be subpar in terms of profitability? And then my second question would be around the pickup that you're seeing in U.S. staffing, and whether you can give us a bit more granularity as to different categories in terms of industrial, automotive within industrial, or whether it's the clerical side that's picking up. Just a little bit more color as to what is driving the pickup in the U.S.
Yeah, percentage is difficult because, as we've seen in France, it'll be in worst case 2%. Annualized, I would say, but I would be surprised if actually all of the 2% would not accept reasonable prices.
And of course, on an annual basis, and it's not from January 1, so that means the total impact for France is going to be would be less than that. It also means we would have capacity to develop other clients. So that also doesn't mean that we would necessarily have exactly that amount of revenue less. So it's very difficult to put a number against it.
Okay, but your worst case is 2%, basically.
Something like that, yeah, in that range. Revenue, eh? Yeah,
yeah, that's helpful, yeah.
Of course, for profitability, it could actually be positive. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then Greg is going to shed some light on segments in the U.S.
Okay, so the answer is it's a couple things, but certainly the retail segment helped us a lot through the holidays. It was a fairly robust retail season, and then probably a couple other industries to note would be finance, in particular some of the mortgage processing business, and in addition, we've seen in the healthcare and pharma sectors some good, but typically it's been more in the white-collar admin and an area that we've been pushing hard in our staffing business in the U.S. to grow. So I think, as Ben said earlier, certainly every industry is contributing, but those would be the highlights.
And what are you seeing in some of the more industrial categories, just out of interest, as we move into January and very early February, I guess?
Now, but again, our focus is we do industrial large scale if we can do it from in-house, and if not, we don't do it. So that means we consciously ignore part of the market. And we focus on more service clerical business where we can get better margins, better profits, and more permanent placements. So that's why our indication of what's happening there, Jamie, would not be reliable to extrapolate to what actually is happening in the market, because it's a conscious choice we've made strategically.
Okay. Am I allowed one more question, or shall I hand over?
Final question, yeah.
Okay. Just in Germany, you mentioned the 6% in January was partly being helped by the CLA wage increases. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could shed some light on volume trends in Germany, both not just number of temps, but also length of assignments. Are assignments getting shorter, as I say, fewer temps, more temps, etc.?
Yeah, other trends are roughly flat. And the growth is purely the result of pricing adjustments following collective labor agreement adjustments.
And is that flat volume the result of tightness in the labor market, or is it also a demand issue now that there's just no incremental demand coming through?
It's a demand issue as well.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay, next question from Toby Reeks.
A couple if I can. The first one is there's quite a lot of labour reform being discussed in Europe. I mean, it's quite a broad question, particularly in Italy and Spain, and specifically proposals seem to be centering around making dismissals easier in both countries. What sort of an impact would that have on your business where they're discussing it?
Obviously a positive one. But again, the highest penetration is one of the most liberal markets in the world is the UK. Because the reasoning is very simple. If business does better, we will have more business. Today we see that a big part of the population can't even get a job. So obviously if the economies get more healthy, and that will happen if we get a more flexible labour market, there's clear evidence of that over many, many years, then business will be better. We've also seen in the past where legislation changed, it hardly had an impact on our volume. There was also many questions, as you might remember, during the big crisis, when we had the Kurzarbeit in Germany, so people were allowed to stay employee but work less hours. Everybody was worried that when the economy would pick up, it would actually cost us growth. It's a very, very small impact. It's for a relatively short period of time. Key is that we create healthy economies, and then we'll have more business. So we actually would applaud flexibilization and more relaxed labor legislation, especially in economies like Spain.
And then on the restructuring costs of $22 million in the quarter, 19 of that is in the Netherlands. What sort of cost savings should we expect off the back of that?
The rule is that we expect reorganizations to be earned back within 12 months. That's okay, the guidance we use.
So we should be thinking about sort of reducing the cost base by that $22 million over the next 4 months, yeah? So it will be annualized by the full year?
On an isolated basis, yes, but of course there are more events and issues.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okay, next question, please.
One addition to the former answer. Of course, the full $22 million also includes some margin. because it's also professionals that were on idle time. So you won't see a reduction in cost for that part of the... It's a smaller part, but still. Sorry, Margot.
Hi, two questions for me, please. The first one on the rest of the world segment. Growth is under pressure there. Can you elaborate a bit on the trends throughout the quarter and also at the beginning of the year? And then also, what has driven the flat margin there and what can we expect going forward? And then my second question is on the German market. Do you see any reason why you're not gaining market share there? Manpower report much lower growth. What drives your performance there versus the market? And could you elaborate a bit on the competitive environment, please?
The rest of the world, that's quite a mixed bag of developments. Part of it is in our South American business, where we are preparing for more extensive growth. So we have absorbed some expenses over there, which has an impact. Our Australian business is not yet performing up to standard. We do see somewhat slowdown in the Indian business in that respect. And I made the point already on the Japanese business, which contributes nicely. That's sort of the mixed bag here. Your second question on market share, Margot, which country did it relate to?
Germany.
As you will have noticed, we've had tremendous market share gains in O10. Comparables are more difficult. If you look at the growth, it's well in line with market. If you look over the last year, we do see the effect of mix. For example, one of our main competitors in Germany, Adecco, has a bigger share in professionals and engineering that has been doing better. So if you compare it to those numbers, it's different. We are with quite a big distance market leader there, and are very happy with the performance in that respect.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next question, please.
David Hancock from Morgan Stanley is online with a question.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. First one is on the US. Do you think you're actually taking market share within segments, or are you just exposed to the higher growth segments within the US? And if you do think you are taking market share, who's that coming from? Is it bigger competitors who may not be having such smooth integration of their acquisitions, or is it coming from the smaller outfits? Second question is on the UK. Clearly a very tough market, but you've made very little money there over the last 2 or 3 years. You said you're optimising the model there. Are you at some point, could you consider more radical action in terms of addressing the UK cost base and UK profitability, please?
Yeah, on the US, I swear to God, we don't know from whom we're taking market share, because the market is so fragmented that in every tender or a client contact, you're fighting somebody else, so that we can't say it. We are convinced we are gaining market share. We're doing considerably better than markets. And as far as we can see in all segments, maybe with the sole exception of the accounting and finance business we had, whereas on the other hand, mergers, the SFN company in that segment is outperforming markets. So again, I think it's just an excellent performance, and I don't know from whom we're taking the market share. Now Brian will clarify a little bit on what we're doing in the UK. Drastic measures or not, Brian?
Yeah, as Ben's alluded to, I think we wouldn't want to take drastic measures to improve the situation in the UK, but rather to continue what we've been doing over the last few years, where we've moved from around 30 relatively small entrepreneurial-led businesses that did things in their own way, with their own systems, with their own brand, to where we are now, which is with many fewer but substantially larger businesses with the same brand, but which are still not as integrated as they should be to give us the scale economies and the sales and cost synergies that some of our comparably sized competitors enjoy. So I think that we continue the process. Obviously, we're learning as we go along and hopefully improving. There's still a lot to do in terms of rationalizing the back office and getting systems to talk to each other. But we're satisfied with the progress we're making, although obviously disappointed that we're not doing better on the bottom line.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have four more questions on the line. Next one, please.
Matthew Lloyd from HSBC is online with a question.
Good morning, guys. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to strip. But what I was interested in was order intake. Some of the independent sort of data for sort of temp vacancies in Europe showed a bit of a pickup in January. And I was wondering whether you'd experienced at least order intake picking up, and then to talk a little bit perhaps about what your fill rates were doing in terms of, are we looking at clients who paused, or are we looking at clients who said, no, we don't need any more temps for the next quarter?
Yeah, order intake follows the revenue. We don't see a certain spike in order intake. There might be some small segments, but I haven't heard about them, so I don't see that. Fill rate is no change. I think it's stable if you look back. And your final part of the question was?
I was just wondering whether you were seeing clients, you had any feel for whether clients were pausing, i.e. trying to work out what was going on with all of the macro, or whether they were actually saying to you, look, our shift patterns mean we won't need any temps for a more prolonged period.
Yeah, as you have seen in the Q4 industries we showed, for example, automotive kept up strongly. And they still are. We usually see indecisiveness at clients in permanent placements, where they actually send out orders. They're looking for somebody for a permanent job, and then it takes them forever to decide, which means in the end they will cancel it. So that's why we see it more than elsewhere. But in general, it starts with a simple reduction in number of orders, leading to less people at work. There's no big translation differences in between the process. Steps.
Okay, and just if I can be very cheeky, and just one quick follow-up question. Can I understand, within your professionals and the white-collar element of staffing, what sort of percentage of your business is finance and public sector, and how much of it is the more interesting, at the moment at least, IT and engineering?
Public sector is very small, obviously, if you look at it total, because it's only Holland and the UK, some in the US, and then some government-related. So that's very small on total business. The other percentage was of what business you said?
So finance? Finance and insurance and finance.
The biggest segment is IT in our overall book, and that is where the US is clearly growing.
In professionals, yeah? My guess is in the range of 8%, but we might get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next question. We have two more left.
Robert Plant from JP Morgan is online with a question.
Thank you. Two questions, please. The higher synergies you're getting out of SFN, where do they come from, and do you think that 40 million could increase further? And then within the UK public sector, what is the worst part of that market? What is the best? Are any of those markets close to stabilizing? Thank you.
Yeah. The synergies, it's across the board, the increase. It's not one individual item. It's the full set of synergy areas that we have updated, and that results in the increased ambition to 40 million. And that's it for now.
Okay.
Brian on the UK?
Public sector, I'm pleased to say, that has stabilised. It's still in decline, of course. It was 16% down in the quarter. It now represents around 20% of our UK business, which is in line with the distribution of the UK working population, so we're quite happy with that. We believe that our care business is now starting to show an improving trend, albeit still negative. Education is still flat, I think that answers the question.
Thanks.
Okay, next question, Olivier.
Olivier Lebrun. Sorry, excuse me, please go ahead.
Olivier Lebrun, Natixis. Good afternoon. A couple of questions about Germany and UK. About Germany, what is the level of idle time presently, and what level do you anticipate for 2012? Regarding the UK, do you have an idea of the rate of decline of public sector for this year, please?
Yeah, as you know, we don't give forecasts, but history always can be either a comfort or a worry. Even when we had the big decline in 09, idle time actually still stayed at low single-digit numbers. And it's well below 2% today, so we don't see any reason why that would spike. UK, no, we don't we don't share any expectations on that level. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the last question on the line that comes from Piet Hein Leunen.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Two follow-up questions, if I may. One is regarding the U.S. business. You're saying that January the combined business is growing by 9%. I guess that is including the SFN business, because you're...
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And what was the number including SFN for the fourth quarter?
7%, roughly.
All right. That's good. And second, regarding the tax guidance, am I correct to understand that you are actually guiding for a little bit lower tax percentage for 2012?
It's the same, 29% to 32%.
All right. Very good. Many thanks.
Okay. We had at least one question in the room left. Konrad?
Comrades on with Berenberg. One question on the dividend. Your policy hasn't changed. The 125, you've hit the floor. I'm a little bit confused about the word floor here, because we know the limits are 30 to 60%, but I was just wondering, are you going to fill it up to the 60%, so to speak? So if your earnings come down in 2012, could you still see an increase in dividend as long as you don't hit the 60% mark?
Yeah, so it should be within the bandwidth of 30 to 60, aiming at €1.25. However, if we would start to, you know, pay out at the lower end of the range, we would have a discussion at on the level of dividend, the absolute level of dividend. But unfortunately, that's not the situation yet.
And my second question on the SFN synergies. The 3 million that you achieved in Q4, as far as I understand, are fully incorporated in SFN's results, i.e. they're part of the 5% EBITDA margin. Is that something that we can expect to continue, i.e. if in a year's time you've achieved the $40 million, will they be fully reflected in the, although you may not report it on a separate basis, but we will obviously ask about it, will you report the EBITDA margin of SFN, including the $40 million?
No, going forward, we'll integrate the businesses, so it will also the synergies will also be part of the integrated unit. But we'll still continue to report on our achievements with respect to synergies, quarter by quarter.
Any more questions in the room? Arun, last question.
And one question on Tempo Team. Can you shed some light on the progress over there? Is the gap to the market narrowing or is it widening? What do you have some targets when you should be back to the market? Because I believe that problem has been there already for at least four or five quarters. So
too long.
The progress been too,
too
so
long,
far?
Arun. We agree. It has been there for too long. What we've seen is that the gap has become a little bit smaller. The gap between Randstad and Tempo Team have stabilized because Randstad has increased more compared to market, and Tempo Team has come a bit closer. We also see, for example, that professionals in Tempo Team is improving. So we now see the first segments where we actually do see an improvement. It's difficult to put a date against the catching up at market, because it also depends a little bit on the area, geographically in Holland, and the segment where they're growing, but we do see some progress. And of course, we also have taken out quite a few costs, because we fired about 130 FTEs, management level, mainly, actually only exclusively in head office, to reduce overhead costs. So that should also have an impact on profitability.
Okay, that ends this meeting. Thank you all for joining here in the room and online. Hope to see you during our roadshows and otherwise in April. Thank you very much.